Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Necessary Roughness, brought to you by Southfield Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. With 11-year NFL veteran, Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year, and captain of the National Championship Michigan Wolverines, John Jansen. And 10-year NFL veteran, two-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle, and Super Bowl champion with the Green Bay Packers, T.J. Lang. Now, here's John Jansen and T.J. Lang.
Well, we're back at it again a little bit later this week because we wanted to let free agency continue to play out. And whether it's free agency or renegotiated contracts, the Lions are in a much different place now than they were last week, than they were even Monday or Tuesday or this morning, which is Thursday morning, March the 23rd. And they have made a couple of moves this morning. One of them is to restructure the contract of Hal Vaitai, their guard who was injured last year. Apparently, it looks like they're hoping that he can come back and play. We'll talk about him in just a minute. Where we want to get to in this week's episode of Necessary Roughness is what has happened so far in free agency for the Detroit Lions, how is that going to affect how we view and what we expect the Detroit Lions to do in the draft? And I'm going to throw at least one mock draft at TJ to get his take on it. It's a kind of a unique spin. But since we talked last week, there's been more help in the secondary, and that came in the form of CJ Gardner-Johnson. Gardner-Johnson signs a one-year, $8 million deal to come and play safety. And just starting off with that one, TJ, your thoughts on CGJ coming to Detroit?
Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
What did I say, Cornelius?
You got your Michigan Lions guys confused.
Starts with a C. That's what I said.
Yeah, I thought, look, he was, after the first wave of free agency there last, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he seemed to be, you know, the best rated available player throughout the weekend. I loved it. I mean, I did. You know, I think we all agreed, you know, probably a month ago on what steps they're going to have to take to start building this team to be a competitor. Defensive backfield was probably the number one area of need that I think a lot of us agreed on. They went out, obviously, last week, signed Mosley and Sutton on the two outside guys to come in and help them in the defensive backfield. And look, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I mean, he played with Aaron Glenn, for Aaron Glenn down in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just on the Philadelphia Eagles, who was one of the best defenses in all the NFL just this past year. Young, I like the signing. I mean, a one-year deal. You know, he seemed like a guy that
– prove a deal for a guy that didn't really have to prove
it. Didn't really have to prove it, but, you know, wasn't getting what he felt he deserved on the open market, which happens to a lot of guys. But, look, I think he's kind of that Swiss Army knife to add to your defensive backfield, meaning, you know, last year I think he played a lot of deep free safety for the Eagles. Prior to that, he played a little bit of safety down in New Orleans, and he actually played in the slot a lot as a you know, that nickel corner. We all know in today's NFL – you know, it's not just old school two corners, two safeties lineup play defense.
You're going to have five and even at times six defensive backs.
At least probably realistically in today's NFL, you're going to have five defensive backs on the field for probably 70% of your plays. So I think it was, look, safety, we all were very encouraged last year with what we saw with Kirby Joseph, right? His ability to take the ball away, his ability to, hawk down the ball, a couple forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, obviously the interceptions, three of them being off of Aaron Rodgers, were certainly impressive. Tracy Walker coming back off of a torn Achilles. There's still some question marks at that safety position. But to me, it was almost, and I know you kind of hinted at it a little bit to start the show, but it's almost a glimpse of what this team is going to do, you know, in another month from now when it comes to draft. They've solidified, I think, in our minds, I think a lot of people's minds, that defensive backfield, right? You still got some guys coming back. You still got Jerry Jacobs, who, you know, last year coming off of injury, still played good football on the outside for you at corner. Will Harris, once he moved to corner, played better than he was at safety. And look, a guy like Jeff Okuda, you add more competition to that defensive backfield room, you know, the cream can rise to the top. I don't think we've still seen the best of what Jeff Okuda can be. So if he has a couple proven veteran leaders in that group with him, to kind of guide him and bring him up to a level of play that, is good enough, you know, to be a great player in the NFL. I think that, you know, it's that competition, having those guys in that room with a lot of youth is going to make everybody better. So I think that box one, I think we can check off. I think the defensive backfield has been taken care of over the past week and a half.
Yeah, and in regards to what that secondary room is going to look like, if you got them all in one room, it's Cam Sutton, Emmanuel Mosley, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, all the new guys, and then Dracy Walker, you mentioned him coming back over the Achilles, Kirby Joseph, Jeff Okuda, Jerry Jacobs, Will Harris, Chase Lucas, and Ifeatu Melifonwenu. Like, it's gone from one of the worst position groups, not just on the team, but in the NFL.
Yeah. Overachievers.
Right. And to a position where if you can continue to show growth from Kirby Joseph, if you get a chance to see Tracy Walker come back healthy from that Achilles injury, there's nothing that says he won't. But I'm not going to say it's the strength of the team, but it is an area of strength now if they all play to their level of ability.
Yeah. And the bottom line is that it's vastly improved, right?
It was last year, yes.
It's not just a little bit improved, right? If they went out and just got Cam Sutton, we could say, okay, they're better. You know, still a lot of question marks. I think with the way that Brad Holmes has attacked the other free agents, bringing three of those guys in makes us feel a lot better knowing that, we got some players back there now. We got some guys that can take the ball away. We got some guys that can – hopefully, like we see with Cam Sutton in his Pittsburgh days, you know, locking down receivers. I mean, that's something that we haven't had here in Detroit for, 3 years, 4 years, ever since Darius Slay left? I mean, it's been a while. So, I love seeing the big moves like this to make a big jump, hopefully, that they're going to have production-wise. Not a small jump. This seems like it's going to be a big jump for that defense.
It does, and when you start thinking about what they did offensively as well, as we're going to eventually get to what this means for the draft, but they bring back Graham Glasgow on a one-year deal. They restructure Hal Vitae this morning in regards to what he brings to this offensive line. Can he be healthy? Is he going to be a guy that can be counted on in this upcoming football season? Your thoughts on, you know, he wasn't here as of our recording last week, but Graham Glasgow, adding him to that O-line room.
Yeah, I think, he's a proven vet. I mean, he started a lot of games, whether it be center, whether it be guard. You know, obviously with Evan Brown leaving, going to, I think it was Seattle.
Yeah.
They were kind of in search for, you know, not only a player, a guy that can play right guard, but a guy that can also be sort of an interior swing type of player. And Graham brings all that versatility, right? And, the other thing you can't really forget is, you know, he was here for, 4 years, Graham was. I mean, he was here through some of the dark times. You know, he knows the history, you know, that surrounds this team and this franchise and the, you know, the pains and the ups and not many ups, a lot of downs, right? He's been a part of that in the past. I think a big thing for him coming back now is, you know, he wants to be a part of this team finally turning it around a little bit. But I think Graham's an awesome player. I think he's a great addition to the locker room. He's a great addition to that offensive line room. They've already got, you know, some good leaders in there with Frank and with Taylor. I think Jonah's a good leader. Graham's, you know, only going to add another layer to that offensive line room. And look, Vitae, I think with restructuring his deal, I was a bit surprised that, you know, he wasn't a flat out cap casualty, but I think they've structured it in a way where actually the cap number would go down this year as opposed to just flat out releasing him. So that tells me, look, I don't think that they're ready to give up on him yet necessarily, but I would expect a day one open competition for that right guard spot between probably Graham and Hal Vitae, as long as he comes back healthy. I think last year the concern with Vitae was, you know, anytime you have a major, I think it was a back surgery.
Yeah,
you know, that's
especially that's what it was reported. I don't know if we know that for sure.
I don't know. No, I know. I know he was, you know, opted. He got hurt, and I think that's what they said. You know, that there was some sort of back. I don't know if he had surgery, back issue, but. Back issues kind of have always been kind of scary, right? So I don't think they would have restructured his deal unless they've gotten some positive news, you know, about his health. So, look, another competition to add there, and may the best man win. And whoever wins that spot, certainly going to be an upgrade over last year because we saw a major rotating door there at right guard for most of the season. I think there were four or five different guys that got good amount of playing time there. So hopefully one of those guys can solidify that spot. And really, you know, cross off most of the boxes, at least for what you need on offense.
Well, and so here are the details of the Vitae restructure. This year, he's taking a pay cut from $9.4 million to $3 million and will go to $1.21 million against the cap this year. It frees up $7 million. And then next year, he's going to be due $9.4 million, and that has been changed into a void year. So, we basically know what happens after this year.
Yeah,
this will be the last time that
1 year prove it deal.
Right,
really
prove you can be healthy.
Yeah,
prove you can contribute.
Right, show us you can be the, you know, 2021 Vitae that started most of the games. Right.
Yeah, and it's so we've seen Romeo Okwara restructure his contract. We now see how Vitae. Why? This is just a general question. Why would guys restructure their deal to take less money to stay in Detroit?
Well, I think when you restructure your deal, you have to be completely honest with yourself. I think there's a lot of players out there that, look, when a team comes to you and says, hey,
we need you to take a
pay
less.
Cut,
yeah.
Your first instinct is, hell no,
you.
Right? Like, no chance I'm doing that. With that being said, though, you have to take – you have to calculate everything, right? If I turn this down and they release me, you know, what is my market going to look like elsewhere? That's what your agent's for, right? That's what for – that's what the, you know, the combine, trying to figure out everybody's numbers and where your guy's going to fit. Taking a pay cut's obviously never easy. But, you know, I think in these circumstances, you know, with everything that we've heard from these players, whether it be guys that are signed under contract or guys that, you know, were free agents throughout the past couple weeks, is that people want to be here, right? The guys, especially the guys that were in that locker room this past season. They want to be here. They feel something special building. They feel like they're going somewhere, you know, big, that they want to be a part of that. So when you look at guys like that, you have to respect the fact that, you know, maybe some egos were put to the side and, you know, ultimately doing, hey, what's best for the team, you know, is if I take a pay cut. But also what might be best for me is staying here as well, knowing that maybe the market on the outside is not going to be as good as, you know, what your pay cut might entail. So always tough when you're a player going through that. But you know what? I think it says a lot about the locker room and where the guys think that this team is heading.
Yeah, and so when we talk about the addition of Graham Glasgow, we talk about the addition of, you know, all of the secondary guys. When you look at most mock drafts and before free agency started, the conversation about that number six pick was, you know, edge rusher, possibly Jalen Carter with, you know, what you know, he may drop to the Lions at six, and I want to get your take on him in just a minute. But also, you know, the corner help. You know, that was a discussion, a corner at six, a defensive lineman at six. And if it wasn't at six, it was at 18, where the Lions sit right now. How has everything that's gone on in free agency freed the Lions up to adjust, or how do you think it affects their draft and where they might be looking at in the draft?
Well, I think there's one spot, I'll just say one group that I'm just completely zoned in on right now, and that's the front seven, right? I think you feel pretty good about what you have on offense. I think you feel pretty good now what you have in your secondary defensively. I don't care who's playing corner, who's playing safety. If you can't get to the passer, if you can't rush the passer and disrupt the quarterback and get hits and get pressures, your all-pro corners are going to be very average, very, very fast, right? So I think that, look, and this is something we talked about a little bit last week too, is I still like to take that approach of, you know, what Philadelphia did, what the 49ers did, you know, what seemed like 3, 4, 5 years in a row, taking, you know, big guy, big guy, big guy, big guy, big guy, right? Pass rusher, pass rusher. I still think that's a path that I would love to see from the Lions come draft night. Whether that's, you know, the first two picks, the first three picks, three out of the first four picks. We need another linebacker. I think that's very clear, off the ball type guy. And look, I think you still probably need two more defensive linemen, hopefully with some pass rush ability. Now, I know, obviously, look, we were thrilled what we saw last year with James Houston, right? We were thrilled with the development by, you know, the fourth quarter of the season with Aiden Hutchinson starting to make impacts, plays in every single game, right? My mind, you know, they're not easy to find, but interior pass rusher guys is a major, major need, I think, for this team. Mm-hmm. And look, whether that's, you know, a lot of talk about Jalen Carter, right, in the month that he's had, and, you know, nothing to write home about. I mean, it's been pretty brutal for that guy. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody, you know, go down that slippery slope in a couple weeks, but whether it's him at six.
Will Laramie Tunsil.
Not really his fault, though. I mean, that guy, you know, that was
not his fault.
Issue.
He put the mask on. I mean, look, it took the bong hit.
Hey, a lot of that's illegal now, okay? I'm not going to judge the kid for that. But, you know.
So let's go there real quick, because Jalen Carter, obviously we know that he was charged with racing. Mm-hmm. And in that racing, he wasn't charged with negligence regarding the death of his former teammate and a recruiting, you know, personnel individual from Georgia. But there are two people that did die in that situation. He had to leave the combine, go and, address the situation, came back to the combine, didn't work out at the combine. And then about 9 days later, 9-10 days later, Georgia has their pro day. He shows up 9 pounds heavier, but appears to be gassed going through some of the drills. Knowing what you know now, and it trust me, we all have limited knowledge of the individual and the circumstances around the racing, but also just around Jalen Carter. Knowing what you know now, if he's available at six, would you take him?
I'm 50-50, to be honest with you. This isn't going to sound good, but after everything that came out around the combine, right, when it came out that, you know, he was driving and potentially racing, allegedly racing with the teammate and with the people that ended up getting you an accident and dying. After that, I kind of took a pause and I'm like, okay, that's obviously not a bright decision, right? That's really stupid. That's something that, so it's awful. I mean, because, you know, people died as a result of that. Yeah. Now, how much liability was on his hands? I don't know. I mean, he wasn't driving the actual car that, you know, got into the accident, but what he was doing was wrong. With that being said, if that was the only story that has come out, even after that, I was like, I would still take him.
We've all made some bad decisions. Maybe not that had circumstances or consequences
right,
like that?
We've all sped, right? We've all done some silly things. We've all, and
at 21 years old, did you make great decisions?
No, but I'm not trying to make, you know, excuses for the kid. I mean, I think it was the night after the parade celebration and, you know, these guys are on cloud nine. These guys are feeling as invincible as they ever will, probably for the rest of their lives. They made bad decisions, right? And it ultimately cost two people their lives, and that's a tragedy. With that being said, you know, I felt like there was enough resolve there to say, okay, this is something that hopefully, you know, he can prove, hey, it wasn't drinking, wasn't doing anything, just I was speeding, right? I was doing something stupid with a teammate, which is a mistake, John. I think we both agree with that. Yeah. Is it a grave mistake where this guy should never play in the NFL? No, that's how I felt about it. And at the time I was like, you know what? I would still take the guy at six because he's an unbelievable football player. When everything came out about the pro day, I was like, you know what? We're starting to see a pattern, right? We're starting to see a pattern. How do you put on 9 pounds in like, I mean, I know I could probably do it, but if you're a kid getting ready for the combine, the draft or pro day, like you, but like a week and a half, you've gotten yourself so out of shape by putting on weight, by not being able to finish any drills at your pro day. I mean, this time period, if you're a 21-year-old kid getting ready for the NFL, you literally have to sit down for probably 2 or 3 months and say, you know what? I'm going to lock it down, right? I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to eat right. I'm not going to go out and do dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to go out and party. I'm not going to go out and drink. I just need 2 months of my time to lock it down and to show these teams that I'm worthy of being a top five pick, right? And I think that we've started to see a little bit of pattern, which for me is concerning a little bit. Now, we don't know much about Jalen Carter's character, right? We don't know much about
how his coaches
think about him, how his teammates think about him, how he works out in the weight room, what he does at practice. We don't know that. All we know is we see the film. We see a disruptive football player. On the flip side, we see a guy that probably is very immature based off of what we've learned about him over the past couple months. That just gives me a little bit of concern because you just see the way that Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell want to build this team, and they've done it the last couple of years, right? High-character guys that come in, chip on the shoulder, want to work hard, want to bust their ass, want to be the best at what they do. You've got the right style of guys. Now, I'm also on the other side.
They're not all choir boys in a locker room.
You can't have a bunch of choir boys. You got to have some dogs. We both played with some dudes. I played with some guys that
I wouldn't let in my house. I
wouldn't let around my family. They're pretty scary.
But
you
they're
know,
pretty different.
Didn't
want to
be in the same car with them at times. But you know what? I wanted those dudes on my team because I knew on Sundays that dude was going to be on my side. And that dude was going to make the other team's life a living hell. So there's still some questions. And we've got a month before we get to this. But as of right now, just I know I took the long-winded way of answering your question. At six, I'm probably leaning 51 as yes, I would still take him because you just can't deny the
what
product
the
that
field.
You see on tape, right? The 49 that tells me though.
So
is this in a year from now, you know, if this guy, we take this guy and he turns out to be a major bust and an immature, you know, jackass. We're going to be sitting here saying, well, the warning signs were on the wall, right? We all knew about the issues that he had. We took a chance on him, right? Those are always the concerns that you have.
And we've heard Dan Campbell talk about no turds, right? You don't want any turds in the locker room.
Yeah.
And it's so having said everything you mentioned about, hey, hard working guys, high character guys in that locker room, they've built it up over 2 years to have a bunch of those guys. Is it time to take a chance on a guy like a Jalen Carter if he does have some character issues, if he is very immature? Have you put together the right locker room to put him in there and say, you know, in some other locker rooms, this goes south. But in this locker room with Anzalone, with Goff, with Hutch, with a lot of the high character guys that you're talking about, they can help this individual be a huge part of the Detroit Lions. Is the locker room of a culture where you could put a guy in there like this? And does that also play a factor into maybe we could take a chance on this guy because we're putting him into the best situation he could possibly have in the NFL?
In the locker room, maybe. I think you've got some good leaders that, you know, can help young guys out. But where a guy like Jalen Carter would be spending 90% of his time in the defensive line room. You know, maybe if you still had a guy like Michael Brockers around that was very valued for his leadership and a, you know, 11-year pro, a guy that knew how to do things the right way, I would certainly say, yeah, I think you can take a guy like that, put a young player under his wings, kind of show him the ropes a little bit. But who in that defensive line room, you know, has any sort of, you know, veteran stature or that we hear incredible leadership about? I mean, I know, hey, look, Hutch is certainly got great qualities. He's in his second year, right? I don't think that you can just going through kind of the totem pole, John, and you remember being in the NFL locker room, you didn't really look to.
But it's a young team all around. There's not a lot of longer-to-tooth guys.
Look, that's where I get a little bit of pause. You know, I look at a guy like Jalen Carter that seems to have some issues, and he would probably be that type of player where, you know, if he ended up in a locker room like or a defensive line room like Philly, right, with Fletcher Cox and with Brandon Graham and with some 10, 12-year vets, guys that know how to get done, that do it the right way, he would I'm just telling you, he would be a lot better player, right? At least first, at least right away. And I'm not trying to bash any leadership here in the defensive line, but it's just a lot of youth, right? I don't think
you and I have both been rookies. We've been second-year guys, and we've also been 10-year vets.
Yes.
And a 10-year vet is going to be looked at completely differently, even if Hutch has all of the great leadership qualities that he displayed at Michigan that we think he showed as a rookie. He's still a second-year guy. Right. And in the NFL, there is, you mentioned the totem pole, there is value in that, that you build up that cachet, and he just hasn't had the time to do that.
Right, yeah. And that's where probably – somewhere in that 49% of pause that I have about Jalen Carter is the fact that he's going to be surrounded by a lot of other youth, you know, second, third year players in that defensive line room. They're not going to have anybody that I feel like can put their arm around him every single day in the meeting room at practice, show him how to get things done, that, you know, some other teams are going to be able to offer him.
So I'm going to give you a scenario. The Arizona Cardinals take Will Anderson, and the Seattle Seahawks, who draft at 5, they're comfortable with Geno Smith. I think they take a quarterback, but let's just say they take Jalen Carter at 5. So Will Anderson, Jalen Carter are off the board. Mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud's off the board. Bryce Young is off the board, and let's just throw in another quarterback. Anthony Richardson seems to be the hot topic right now, and we could talk about more about him and where these quarterbacks go after some of these pro days. Maybe we'll throw that in next week, but let's just say he's off the board. So you got Will Levis and everybody else that is on the, you know, and the Lions are on the clock at 6, knowing what we just talked about, that they've gone out and signed some secondary help. They've gone out and brought in Graham Glasgow. Vitae is going to be back. Where do you go with that number 6 pick?
I'm going to give you a guy that I think is going to shoot up boards. And I'm going to give you a guy that I think the Lions are going to be very fascinated with. It's a guy that, look, a couple weeks ago I was starting to get a little annoyed because at the combine he was being compared to an all-pro player, a Hall of Fame talent, a once-in-a-generational type of guy. And that's Kalijah Kancey, the kid from the defensive tackle from Pittsburgh.
At 6?
Look, I'm not telling you, hey, I know I'm surprising you right now, John. I'm making a bold prediction. I'm saying I can see this guy in the next couple weeks start to shoot up draft boards, right? Because Jalen Carter, what's the trend with him right now? It's going down.
Right.
Kalijah Kancey, he's probably that next defensive tackle name that people have on the big board, right? Probably Jalen Carter, Kalijah Kancey. Look, Carter keeps falling. Kancey can keep rising. And look, hey, where did Brad Holmes come from? He came from the Rams, right?
Oh,
he was
there, you're going to give me the Aaron Donald comparison. He's not Aaron Donald.
I never said that,
you're
John.
Going there. Where
I
did
said,
it? Well, okay.
I said I got annoyed
I
a couple weeks.
Let me,
did
I'll
you
let
not
you
hear
finish.
Anything I
I'll
just
let you
said?
Finish. No,
I said I was annoyed a couple not. Weeks ago at the Combine because people were comparing him to Aaron Donald.
Okay.
Oh, he's from
Please
Pitt.
Finish.
Oh, he's a small
Please
guy.
Finish. Yes,
oh,
Brad Holmes came from L.A.
But this is what I'm telling you that I feel in my heart. I wouldn't be surprised if the Lions fall in love with a guy like that because Brad Holmes saw it firsthand. He saw the fact that they took a small defensive tackle, a guy that everybody said, oh, he can't
Too
do
small.
It, right? He can't play defensive tackle. I'm not saying Kalijah Kansi is Aaron Donald. I'm not saying he compares to Aaron Donald. What makes Aaron Donald is his work ethic, right?
Yeah.
The fact that this guy's an absolute animal, spends probably 12 hours a day in the gym, and, you know, he's just a freak,
he
right?
He's too small.
Nobody's going to be compared to Aaron Donald, right? That's just not fair. But
comes from
I'm
Pittsburgh.
Just telling you, when I think that if this is just a prediction of mine, and you can look at probably in a month from now, look back and say, you're an idiot. What are you thinking? I don't know if I would take him at six, John. That's probably a little bit high, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does start to rise up boards. Right now, I mean, you can find him anywhere in these mock drafts from I saw him going as early as 13 to as late as probably 25.
Yeah.
But I think he cemented himself at least as a mid-first round guy. And every single year we see guys, John, oh, this guy was projected, you know, to go 22. Wow, he just went in the, you know, top eight. Oh, my God. Nolan Smith, another guy from Georgia, could be that same type of player, right? I think a month ago, everybody's thinking, hey, you know, maybe late first round, we can get this guy. Now it's like I've seen one, you know, mock drafts. Hey, somebody taking him at eight.
Yeah.
It's like, holy, you just don't know what's going to happen. And look, there's so much time between now and the draft where these teams are going to start having, you know, these players come in for interviews and workouts and, you know, all this preparation where they get to talk, things are going to start leaking. Hey, something's going to get thrown out there that, you know, whoever's picking at eight, I don't know, the Falcons, whoever it is, wow, they're falling in love with this guy. That's going to make every other team start to probably rethink their board a little bit too and maybe move a couple guys up that they thought they could get later on. I just think Kansi and I think a guy like Nolan Smith are going to be two guys that we see in the next month that are going to rapidly rise up draft boards because this is what teams look for. Teams look for guys that can rush the passer, right? Kalijah Kansi, I know he's small. I know he's, you know, 6'1", 280. He's going to have to be utilized the right way in the NFL for him to succeed. But he, you watch the skills that he had in college. I mean, he can rush the passer. He can get in the backfield. He can do a lot from the inside. A guy like that that I'm sitting here looking at, like I said, John, I don't know if I'm ready to say I'd take him at number six, but he's a guy that I think would fit this team and fit what the probably the biggest need they have now since they address the secondary.
Yeah, and I mean, if he's there at 18, I'm fine with that. I think six might be a little bit high.
I don't think he's going to be there at 18.
He might not be. You know. So, okay, if he's not there at 18, let me give you this scenario. And this one came out last night. I think it's interesting because this one came from CBS, and it involves a trade. Now, the Lions, who pick at six, trade with the Washington Commanders, and the Commanders move up from 16 to six. And in return, the Lions get, obviously, that number 16 pick. So they'll pick 16 and 18 this year. They get a third-round pick in 97, and they get the Commanders' first-round pick next year.
To drop 10 spots? Yeah, I would do that.
Okay, so you do the trade.
I would, because
I would, too.
You're dropping back 10 spots. Yeah, you're still going to get a good player there, but you're picking up a first next year. I don't think I'm going on a limb by saying I don't think Washington, no disrespect to your alma mater.
Oh, no, they're not going to they're gonna be garbage this year.
Next year. So
I agree. That's going to be a top 10 pick.
I think there's a high chance that could be another top 10 pick. And look, I think if you do that, then the theory that I shot at you last week or a couple weeks ago with them potentially moving up some point, I think you could package, you know, 18 in a second to go move up to, you know, 12. Right now you're picking 12, 16. Now you got, right. So I think there's a lot of possibilities, but if that trade was available, I would absolutely take it.
I would do. And so in this mock, they took Quentin Johnson at 16. They took Bijan Robinson at 18. And I don't really care about that. They took Quentin Johnson, the wide receiver from TCU at 16.
And who at 18?
At 18, they took Bijan Robinson. Running back from.
I have an issue with that.
Well, so, okay, yes. Yeah.
I like the trade. I don't like what they did with it, though.
But in that, if you love Kalijah Kansi, he's starting to rise up my board as well. He's taken at 17 by Pittsburgh. So at 16, you could get Kalijah Kansi with this trade. And if you package 18 and a second and you move up to 12, maybe you take him there. You take another, you know, maybe a corner at 16. I think this would provide a lot of opportunity and maximum. You love having two first round picks this year. Yeah, you back up to six, but there's a clear drop after five. If Will Anderson and Jalen Carter, and depending on where you believe Jalen Carter is, if he's draftable or if he's not for you at six, you drop down to 16. Yes, you're going out of the top 10, but you get two first-round picks this year. You have two first-round picks next year. You still have that draft capital of 2 seconds this year to be able to move up into that 11-12 range. And if you're at 16, on the draft trade value chart, that's $1,000 value. And if you want to get up to, say, 12 where Houston's at, 11 where Tennessee's at, you only got to come up with 350 more points. And guess what?
Their second round
pick is worth 350 points. So you could package that number 18 or 16 and move up a few more spots to be able to take Kansas and still have your 16 or 18 available.
And you might be able to parlay.
And you get two first round picks next year.
Yeah, you might be able to parlay Washington's first next year into a Caleb Williams or a Drake May type.
Drake May. out of North Carolina.
I would take that trade in a heartbeat. I mean, I know that, look, we all get enamored with, you know, picking in the top 10, right? Picking number six. Hey, we're going to get one of the best six players, right? If you move down to 16, everybody's, oh man, we're not, maybe not going to get as good of a player, but I would do that trade in a heartbeat because first round picks, we know that's gold in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
That's a modern version of gold, man. That's the biggest diamond you can have is first round pick. So I would not hate that trade at all. I would probably not like the picks that this mock gave you with those traded picks.
I agree.
That being said, though, I think they're going to be in a good spot either way. Look, and this Jalen Carter talk is certainly fascinating. We obviously are still a little bit more than 4 weeks away from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what's going to happen from here to then. I mean, I hope, you know, part of me, that 51% John, still hopes that, you know, he's able to clean this act up a little bit in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And if he does slide to six, he can come in and be a – you know, all pro type guy on the interior for us. But either way, there's going to be a ton of talent in this draft. And look, Brad Holmes is giving us plenty of reason to put our full trust in him to go out there and get guys that can help you day one, right? We saw it last year. 6 out of 7 defensive players, didn't matter what round they were picked, came in and played big time football for you. So I think maybe it's not fair to expect that to happen every single year, but he certainly has deserved, you know, our trust in letting him just do his job and go find the right players.
Well, as we continue to inch closer to the draft, it still feels like it's a long ways away. It is about a month away. We're going to talk in the coming weeks about some other opportunities the Lions may have. And as they make moves, we'll adjust. But we're going to talk some of the prospects on the offensive line, more prospects, defensive line, what they might do in the second and third rounds. So stay tuned for all your off-season Detroit Lions information right here with Lang and Jansen on Necessary Roughness.